Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. For more information about the news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geeksone.com.
Where do you keep your cervical pillow?
No, it's all right. You accuse me of fondling myself in front of Peter.
Only after you were poking him.
Welcome.
Sorry.
Everybody.
Welcome.
Hello, my geeklings.
It's another episode of Crazy Geeks On.
This is our recovery episode after taking the beating from the women last episode.
Cat had my arm in a sling. It was horrific.
Welcome, everybody.
I haven't been so glad to be single in quite a long time.
But Lisa stepped in for that.
Absolutely.
I hope everybody liked the last episode. I know it was kind of a departure from our usual usual episode, but, you know, that's all good. Everyone on the board seemed to like it.
Variety is the spice of life.
You know,
I keep trying to convince my
women
wife
in
that,
geeks,
but
they
would
buy it.
We asked the women to answer questions and answer them truthfully, and I thought they did a good job.
They did a fantastic job.
Didn't pull any punches. We actually asked them, I thought, tough questions because it, you know.
It worked
uncovered.
Out very well.
Yeah, I think.
Although what was hilarious was that Kat was desperately against me getting fuzzy 20-sided dice. And then she mentioned the fact that she had run away from a guy with funny 20-sided dice on the highway, and thereby everybody in Geekland sent me the links to find fuzzy 20-sided dice. So now...
You got them on order?
I'm going to be getting
them. Nice.
Yep. That's what you get.
Yep.
How was everybody's geek 2 weeks?
Geek 2 weeks. We had our week off. It was lovely.
I don't know about you guys, but I had a full geek week.
Absolutely.
I had this crazy... I kept seeing, like, weird sightings. I saw two Star Trek characters. I saw a Serenity character.
The characters themselves?
Well, the actors.
Here? Oh, the actors.
The actors. I think Chakotay lives somewhere in my neighborhood here because I see him all the time eating around where I live. And so I saw him. I saw Trip from Enterprise shopping. Then I saw... Summer, the little kick-ass girl in the Serenity movie. And I saw her down where I was working. So it was like all in this like weird 1 week thing. And then Peter and I went to a gaming convention.
Yep.
How was that?
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good.
These guys are a different strain of geek. I mean, I've never seen...
Peter, they're just regular wargamers. Peter hasn't seen it. It's the first time Peter's seen it.
No. It's just I have never seen... I mean, we've been to anime conventions. We've been to Comic-Con. But I have, like, never seen 82-year-old grandmother geeks.
Okay? Yeah.
That one surprised me. There was there were some...
Oh, no, they're out there.
Playing role-playing games.
I have convinced people in World of Warcraft. There's a small group of people out there who know my character from Tichondrius, Iron Widow, as being played by a 60-year-old grandmother of three in Los Angeles who got addicted to World of Warcraft by her grandson.
And you've convinced them that this is the case?
Well, who would come up with such a stupid-ass lie as that?
Right. You.
It's believable. You know, it's like I'm not the Hooters waitress that every other guy pretends to be, you know?
Right.
Well, Peter and I played a game, which I'm going to talk about in my news segment. We were taught by a man there and played a game, and we'll talk about... But I thought the convention was pretty cool.
It was a lot of fun.
We are planning on doing a miniatures episode at some point.
Woohoo!
I've got two different people lined up who know two different miniature wargaming.
Oh, you got someone on your side too?
I've got someone on my side too.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yep. So, and apparently the guy on my side is making fun of the guy on your side.
He doesn't know the guy on my side.
He thinks his game is for wusses.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a great geek. I actually ended up, I had three auditions for games which are coming up, and I had to sign a non-disclosure for all three of them, so I cannot mention them on the air. But you're going to flip out.
These are video games?
They're video games, and they are out of control. They were all for Xbox 360.
Which of us will flip out?
All of you.
Really?
Yes. For individual reasons.
That's unusual.
Like literally one game for each geek.
We don't really have much overlap in our video games.
You mean they're
right. That's what I'm saying. There's one for Don, for Aaron, and there's one for Peter.
They're coming out with a sequel to Space Channel 5 for Don?
You don't even know the name of our geeks anymore, Aaron.
John? All right, anybody else have... Last night, we had a Super Battlestar Galactica, although Matt didn't go.
Well, I haven't seen it.
I know.
After a certain
point.
But there was a screening at the Directors Guild of a Battlestar episode, the most recent one.
Right.
And we got to see many of the actors. We got to see number eight.
Baltar was there.
Shannon
was there.
Number eight. She's
the president.
Wait, Adama. I thought it was number six.
No, number six. Number eight.
Boomer.
Boomer.
Eight
Boomer
is Boomer.
Number
Boomer's
eight.
Boomer is number eight.
Six is six.
Six is six.
Yeah.
And
six,
then
six.
Sixy.
David Icke and
Apollo.
And
the two executive producers.
Yeah, David Icke. And what's the other guy's name? The guy.
Ron Moore.
Are they big geeks?
Ron Moore was awesome.
Total geeks.
Was fantastic.
Yes. None of the actors were geeks. Not a single one of the actors that were cast had seen Battlestar Galactica.
Well, most of them were too young.
Come on.
So what? I'm young.
Yeah. I'm younger than Matt, and I've seen him.
Actually, wait. Baltar had seen Battlestar Galactica.
Baltar had, you're right.
Because he was like, he was excited. His story was he was really excited about it, and then he found out that they wanted him to play Baltar, and he was like, what? You know, because Baltar's...
Are you me? The old guy in the...
the cape?
Cape?
Yeah.
Starbuck apparently didn't know until halfway through the audition process that the original Starbuck was a male.
Yeah.
So
she didn't know until after she had the part.
Oh, was it after the part?
That's probably why
after
she got it.
Part. And then the other thing was the character that plays Lee read it and he was told he was playing Apollo and he couldn't find the name Apollo because everyone was by the name Lee. And he's going, what the hell's going on in here? Who am I?
Because maybe this takes place after the other series. Yeah. And I'm like, this is just a continue. I mean, he didn't make any of the connections. It was now, his call sign and not his real name.
Right. So. And then Boomer.
Edward James Olmos is quite the talker, though.
Yes, I know.
Is he really?
He was very eloquent, but super long-winded.
Yeah. Oh.
A little self-involved, too. Absolutely.
You mean an actor?
Shut up.
Going on and on and on for... Well, for like an hour and a half?
He talked four times longer than
anyone
else. And he only had one question.
Yeah. They asked him, so how'd you get the part? And then you find out the entire like script creation process, his original like agenda for how a Latino actor needs to be portrayed. You know, is this a role that a Latino actor would contribute to the Latino community by taking?
Well, I think he had an agenda and he wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, he does have an agenda.
But you could see everyone's faces. They were very good about it, but you could kind of see them going, oh, here
and
goes again.
When they turned to ask Mary McDonnell, well, what interested you in the role? She responded with, well, I wanted to know what it would be like to be Latino in space. So the group of them were charming.
To which she got a huge ovation because it was very funny.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The president, all right, one, the president is cool on the show. Two, the president in real life, Mary McDonnell, is nothing like the president, but she is so cool. She was funny. She was like alert and totally into the audience.
Wow.
Have any of you ever been to like a fan con? You know how you can pick out which actors are like, I'm here for the paycheck and you people scare me?
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that's just like, come on over, give me a hug, let's drape ourselves on the desk and take some shots.
Yeah.
You know, she was the big hug the crowd type.
Yeah.
Actress.
Yeah. She had really nice energy to her.
And we also got to see an episode in high def projected on the big screen. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that you missed, Aaron, was the three of us went to go see Nightwatch.
Oh, yeah.
Which we have talked about on this show. It's Russia's biggest grossing film of all time.
Yes.
And the concept being...
Justifiably.
Do you want to pitch the concept?
So you thought it was a good movie, too?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a pretty damn good movie. I thought... for me, I'm a big guy in white hat, guy in black hat. Don likes good is not good. Evil is not really evil.
Right.
There's somewhere in between. So Don loved this film. I really like happy ending the Death Star blows up at the end of things. So I was a little bit at the end of this going, hey.
There's two more movies.
But that being said, it's it's a well-told story. It's very interesting. It's basically about forces of light, forces of dark against each other. Right. They make a pact that the good will watch over the bad during the night, and the night will watch over the good during the day.
Right.
And they'll form the forces of Night Watch and Day Watch.
Well, it's not exactly a night or day issue. It's just that they'll
police each other.
They'll police each other. Right. So the Night Watch is the good guys who keep the bad guys in line, and the Day Watch is the bad guys that keep the good guys from...
So it's like vampire cops.
Yeah.
Kind of, but they're vampires and shapeshifters and seers and witches.
I think they're all vampires, but all of them have different powers. That's something...
No, I don't think they're all vampires. No.
I think they all are vampires.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Two of us do not think that they're... I think, you know...
I think you want them all to be vampires.
You'd be incorrect, because it made less sense to me, but I was under the impression that all of them needed blood.
No.
No.
No, no.
You said they needed blood when you were hunting something. When you were hunting down people who are like us.
Yeah, he said...
Right, so they all need blood at some point.
No.
So they're vampiric.
And that was the whole point of the licensing for the Darksiders. You're licensed to go get the blood you need.
No. They can get blood, but they're just not allowed to kill people when they get their blood.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but if they need it, then that means they're vampiric.
Yeah, but not everybody needs it.
Not everybody needs it.
In other words, there's a point in the movie where one of the characters drinks blood, and he does it because it allows him to get on the wavelength of the
vampires that he's tracking.
The bad vampire he's tracking.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's the only person that drinks blood in the entire film.
Yeah.
And he's the only... So the other characters don't drink blood.
For the two people that he's hunting.
The vampire.
Those
and
are the bad guys.
There are implications in the movie that others drink blood, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How about this? I'll go see the movie,
I'm disagreeing with you. I believe that all of them drink blood.
Okay.
So,
all right,
Wait. So the bear character, the cat character, you know, they drink blood?
They didn't explain fully how that works, but they did state outright that the Darksiders feed off something in mankind,
yes,
and the Lightsiders do too. They didn't go into how that occurs.
They didn't talk about blood. They talked about energy. They talked about
but
the
that's still vampiric.
Dark. Yeah, whatever. Okay.
All right, so
Aaron will solve it.
Okay, so are we?
But anyway, I recommend this movie too. The cinematography is really good and much better than I expected.
Yes.
The acting is better than I expected. The story is interesting. It ranges from funny to just dark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is the first movie I've ever walked out of where I had to comment on the way out, damn, the subtitles were amazing.
Yeah, the subtitles in this thing are really...
Subtitles are a character
well
in and of themselves.
Yeah.
Because
they do a couple things in this. Like, one of the things that they do is you know, most times subtitles, they just take the subtitle, put it up there. They don't match it to the character when they're talking.
Right.
In this one, they're really good about matching stuff to the characters they're talking. So if the character even pauses, they'll put up half the line. And then if the character pauses, they'll wait. And then they'll put up the second half line as they continue.
Smart.
Yeah. That's happened in a couple movies before.
Like, there's one guy gets thrown against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so the words that are in front of him as he's thrown back, the words are thrown back and also hit the wall and
slide
down
slightly.
Yeah,
that's good.
And then I know you're in a hurry. I can tell you're in a hurry. You want us to move
on. We can keep talking.
But give us a second. The other things that happen are, for example, like when one of the characters is whispering, okay, her words come in, and this is the call for the character. Her words come in as red and then dissolve like blood and water.
Because she's a vampire.
You know? Another thing that happens is one of the characters is you know, waving at a mosquito, and as he waves, his hand wipes away the words off the frame,
right,
the screen.
It's a lot of work, too.
Yeah. Well, also keep in mind, the subtitles are not static across the bottom of the screen, as like the call you're talking about.
Yeah.
The subtitles are actually fading in like at various points on the screen.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you're not looking at them, it's like a whisper. If you're not looking at it, you may miss it.
Which is great, because also you're not so like, I'm missing the action of what is going on because I'm paying attention to what I'm reading.
Yeah.
A lot of the times they're really helping you into the story. And I was really brought into it a lot more because
especially if they place them where it's easy to focus on them instead of always.
Yeah.
Right.
But did you find that it was hard to find them, or did they do a good job of?
They did a brilliant.
It's
job.
Intuitive.
It's super. It's super well done. Yeah.
Let me ask you kind of a weird tangential question, real quick. Subtitled movies. Do subtitles get in the way for you or no?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
I've just never had that problem.
Well, because sometimes they, you know, sometimes it's like, they don't line up very well with the performance of what the character is saying.
Right.
So you can read it, but you know, you're not sure what word goes where, or
right.
you're not sure what you know what type. You don't get a sense of the emotions of that.
Especially with anime, with bad translation.
Oh, I just saw Appleseed, and I was like, they kept changing getting the tenses wrong.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, has he been dead or is he dying?
My father's dying 20 years ago.
Yeah. You know, your father's dying. I went, shit, I thought that dude was... I thought they said he was dead like 20 years ago. He's dying? He's dying. I'm like, wait a minute. I think he's dead. I think he's got the tense wrong. And then they switch back. I'm like, oh my God, I can't get this thing straight. So, anyway.
Let's do some news, shall we?
Yeah.
Geek news. Right, well, I guess I'll start off this week. This is Don. Hello, everybody. Both of my news stories this week are homage to Aaron. One in the fact, because it is a rumor, and the other is a, oh my God, I can't believe they studied this story. Okay, first story, Apple to switch to Windows? Question mark. This is from PC Magazine, basically putting forward the concept that there's a lot of evidence out there right now suggesting that Windows may in fact be switching over to Windows in the near future.
Apple may be switching over to Windows.
Apple.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. The first is that the Apple Switch campaign is over and nobody switched. The second is that the iPod lost its FireWire connector because the PC world was the new target audience. Also, as though the iPod was designed to get people to move to the Mac, this didn't happen. And, of course, that Apple has switched to the Intel microprocessor, which is integral to all the Microsoft stuff.
That's weak.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, the story, if you read into the story, it also puts forward a lot of other kind of convincing rumor evidence.
Interesting.
Including that a lot of the software that is normally supported by Mac has not yet been transferred over.
I like that our Mac users are scoffing.
I don't care about it being a Mac or not, as long as I can use the programs I need.
I can't help thinking it would be a huge boon to Macintosh and that you'd finally be able to have all this other software available to you.
I love the
Amiga. I also can't help thinking, ooh, welcome to Virus Land. Enjoy it.
Yeah. So. Well, I can see in the distant future Apple leaving the computer world entirely because they will eventually own the media distribution center. If they continue down the path they're going and they start distributing television, music, film, who knows, they maybe start distributing video games using a la Steam, then why would they keep building computers? They're just going to be distributing media and making a killing off of it. So I think maybe in 10 or 15 years, Apple could just be a completely different company, but I don't know.
Interesting. That's an interesting supposition.
You know.
Bring it.
Well, I want to talk about, this isn't news per se, but it was a game that Peter and I played at Strategicon. I guess that's how you pronounce it, Strategicon.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hot new, you can't get your hands on it, Euro game out of Rio Grande Games called Kalis.
They named that actually after one of our guys on the forum.
Except for this is spelled with a C. C-A-Y-L-U-S.
That's because he has licensing over the name.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Anyway, this game, each player plays, they play like project managers for building, constructing buildings of this city and a castle. For King Philip's Fair.
Okay.
And in a way, it's a la Puerto Rico-ish, where you're kind of bidding and jockeying for position
I dated
of
a girl who is a la Puerto Rico-ish.
But you can't get this game right now. It's sold out. In fact, at the fair, it sold out in like an hour.
Yeah, and I got to say, in all fairness, the way you're describing this makes it sound like, why would I ever want to play this game?
Well, Puerto Rico is the same way.
Same way. This is actually, it is a really great game. It's a lot of fun. It, you know, it takes a second to figure it out. It's not.
A gamer second or a real second?
It takes a gamer second
to
figure it out.
Oh, boy.
It's not,
who did you knock down and take a copy from?
We couldn't.
They had a copy there, that was for people to try.
If man, you had gone, you could have not.
There was
gone.
I'm
ashamed of you two.
There was a rep from what's the name?
Rio Grande Games was there
and had it. We sat down and we played it, and it's a lot of fun. It's cool.
Euro games, they've come up with another way to distribute the players throughout a turn, so not everybody's just waiting around, and it's a new way of mixing it up and, you know, jockeying for position, who's going to go first, second, third, fourth, fifth, that type of thing, and it really works well. If you can get your hands on it, it's about a two-hour game, 2 to 5 players.
Nice.
They're reprinting them right now, so probably any day now you'll be able to get a copy, at least order them online.
That's cool.
If you like Puerto Rico, I think you'll love Kalos. If you really want to try a game that has no dice, there's no random to this game at all. You play your ass off. If you lose, you lose because you didn't play correctly.
Nice.
This is a great game. Try it out. It's called Kalos. I'll put a link to it on our website.
I like that. I mean, game design that can make a good game no matter what the game is about.
Right.
I just brought Ticket to Ride to a group of people who play board games, but not really, right? And so, like, 5 of us were playing Ticket to Ride, and there were, like, 4 people that were sitting around doing something else. And when the 4 people who were sitting around doing something else realized we were playing a game about trains, they totally started making fun of us, right? Just, like, have you finished your train set yet? But every single person I introduced that game to was fanatical about it. They loved it, you know?
Actually, there's one game that after I saw at the convention being played, I totally want to go buy. It's called Railroad Tycoon.
Yeah, that did look good.
It's this board is like the size of this rug.
Is it based on the video game?
I think it's based off the video game. Okay. This board is beautiful, but it's the size of my kitchen table. It's huge. And the pieces are like little – it looks like you're building a model train set almost. It really looks fun to play. They have, you know, documents and, you know, old-time money, and it really looked fun to play.
Railroad Tycoon was actually a very fun game, but the content – drove me away from it at first. It took me forever to try.
So you've played the board game?
I've played the video game.
Oh, you played the video game. Yeah. Oh, the board game looks really good. So anyway, I'm done.
Hit it up, Peter.
So the Da Vinci Code trial opens in Britain.
I didn't know it was starting.
Well, I'm going to tell you why it's starting. there's a book out there called The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, which was also published by Random House.
Yes.
As is the Da Vinci Code. And they're suing the Da Vinci Code. They're claiming that Dan Brown stole
the concept
that they put forward.
Oh, for God's sakes.
I'm not going to say what it is in case anyone hasn't read it, but they're saying that the mystery that is uncovered is actually lifted directly from their book.
The concept has been around for hundreds of years.
And in fact, this is what Dan Brown is using as his defense. He's saying, look, I'm not going to tell you that I didn't look at this book and I didn't, you know,
but it's history.
Yeah, use it as a resource. But the concept that they put together, it's not exactly history. It's conjecture.
It's conjecture at history.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's an alternate history.
And so what he says is, you know, he says there are a lot of other sources out there that point at this too and talk about this. And, you know, so this is a trial that's expected to last 3 weeks, and we're gonna have to see how it pans out.
Yeah, talk about blood. There's blood in the water. And they're like, I can get me some millions.
Exactly.
Well, you know, they're just hoping he'll settle out of court.
Please, God.
Well, he did.
Have you guys heard about that? I mean, I think actually we did a report, but the woman who's suing the Harry Potter chick.
And J.K. Like, Rowling.
We brought that up once, yeah.
Yeah, and the names are exactly the same. And I mean, that actually looked like a legit lawsuit. Because normally I'm like, oh, come on. And then I started reading like what the book was about. A young schoolboy going to school, learning about becoming a wizard, and his name's like Harriet Potter. And I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. They didn't even change the name. I mean, it was bizarre. Okay, keep going. I'll try to find it again.
Whack job. All right, so AOL this week has defended its certified mail plan. This is not a rumor. AOL has a new thing called the Good Mail Certified Email, which means that other companies can pay to send mail, and it will pass through their spam filter directly into your email box. So what they've said is that this, you know, this will now go forward because a lot of people have been criticizing it as a way for people to pay so that they can send spam to your email box. In a statement following the press
conference, I thought it was the opposite. You pay AOL to block the spam, right?
You will have AOL has a spam filter.
Free. I mean, it's okay. Quote unquote.
So
free.
What is this? Is you a company pays them to unlock the spam?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, say you want to sell something. Right. Say you want to sell some trinket. You go to AOL and you say, hey, you know, here's this money. Now let me send all your.
Hey, yeah. Let them do. I mean, it's fine. You shouldn't be paying AOL anyway. And if destroy their company.
I still have an AOL account. I've had an AOL account since the internet came out. Like that was my very first introduction to the internet.
Yeah, you need to stop that.
And well, you know what? I've had that email forever. I still keep getting emails from people who knew me back in the day.
Mm-hmm. What do you have a CompuServe account too?
I used to, I'm afraid to give it up because those people will lose contact with me.
Okay,
I'll send them a forward.
If I start getting spam from any of these groups, if this goes through, I will quit my account.
Yeah, and so will everybody else. I mean, spam is probably like the number one factor to change. I mean, that would get me to change in a day. And their company will go under.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest. I hate AOL.
Everybody hates AOL.
Well, what is the reason why you hate AOL, though? What do they do? If you don't use AOL, what's to hate?
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to be an AOL.
So did I.
You know.
But I find a lot of people who don't use AOL hate AOL, and I don't get that. If you don't use it, who cares?
Well, no. I mean, obviously, I don't hate AOL. Like, it bothers me. I think it's weird that people pay for something that
is free.
Is free on the internet.
Yeah. I had to convince my dad to get off of his CompuServe account, and he still won't. AOL has no intention of swaying from its certified email course, and at least one analyst firm said it shouldn't feel any pressure to do so. In a statement following the press conference of the coalition of organizers rallying against AOL's proposed use of Good Mail certified email pay-to-send service, nice acronym, AOL says implementation of this timely and necessary safety and security measure for our members takes place in the next 30 days. Mark it on your calendars. MoveOn has basically said that this is an email tax, that it disempowers regular people, and is a step towards dismantling the free and open internet. The very existence of online civic participation and the free internet as we know it are under attack. Basically, Jennings, the guy's head of AOL, said, balderdash and piffle. I just like it because he said balderdash and piffle. Nothing's really changed.
Now we have to put the explicit tag on our podcast.
Nothing's really changed. If users are complaining about some email, service providers will block the sender whether or not they pay some sort of bond or fee. There's no substantive change here. If you're an existing sender with a good reputation, you should have nothing to worry about. Well, nothing new anyway. So
why I don't care if they have a good reputation or not. It's still junk mail.
In my email box.
But why would MoveOn start blowing money on this?
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Oh yeah, MoveOn.org is rallying people to try and block this from happening.
Yep.
Just in order because it's part of quote unquote liberal agenda. It's free speech. It's information.
If it's free speech, then just open up the gates and let everybody spam.
MoveOn is like the new ACLU.
Yeah, but it's a group oriented ACLU. It's it's more like an association of people with similar ideas.
It's an MMOACLU.
MMOACLU.
There we go.
All right. Donnie, back to you.
My second ode to Aaron. All right. A new study shows reading is the key to college success.
Did you just figure that out?
One major factor separates high school graduates who are ready for college from those who aren't, a new study shows. How well students handle complex reading.
No way!
Yeah, this is some deep stuff
here. If you read, you get smarter? Shut up!
Oh, God.
Let's see.
Oh, my God. You're
the ACT
so
isolated
smart.
Reading complexity as a critical factor by analyzing the results of 1.2 million high school seniors in 2005 who took the well-known ACT college entrance test.
You know what they did? They took their $1 million grant, and then they drove off in a red convertible, just like those two guys in Ferris Bueller in the garage.
Yeah. Woo! Mm-hmm.
Based on that test, only 51% of students showed that they're ready to handle the reading requirements of a typical first-year college course. So basically what they go into in this article is talking about how We view reading skills as being an elementary school subject, so we don't really continue to teach it throughout high school.
That's true.
Which means most people will stop reading at a sixth grade level. So, by the time they graduate high school, they haven't progressed to the literacy level necessary to handle college text.
I think this is a good study. I think actually they're right.
But look at that, Aaron. Interesting how if you dig deeper into the study, it becomes valuable.
Aaron.
Okay. News story. Rockstar announces their next gen game. From the people who brought you the Killing Spree.
Of Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto. And the new disastrous Bully video game where you'll be able to beat up little kids and torture kids on the schoolyard. They bring you Ping Pong.
Kick ass.
That's right. Rockstar's newest announcement is they're coming out with a tabletop tennis game.
Is it like Ping Pong Extreme?
I don't know.
It's Rockstar. It's got to be Ping Pong.
It looks like that. Like they have some screenshots that kind of look like those. Yeah. Like
instead of using paddles, you're going to be using Vietnamese prostitutes that actually catch and return the balls from there.
Well,
nice.
Nice.
Wow, that was a visual.
It did look like, you know, like this Vietnamese, like...
From their hands. What were you people thinking?
It did look like, you know, I can add those sound effects. It did look like they were playing in one of those, like, fighting, you know, like underground Vietnamese fighting rings, you know, with people on the balcony screaming while you're playing table tennis. They only had like two screenshots, so I don't know. It's totally bizarre.
That's hilarious.
One of the interviews with them was like, you know, why table tennis? And they said, well, we like table tennis.
Yeah. It's probably because they've got a, you know.
You got to respect that, you know.
They've got a great used ping pong table in the back, and they were like, "This, we should make this into a game."
I think it was probably this. Their lawyers came up and said, hey, how about maybe a different type of game this year? How about, like, I don't know, table tennis?
How about something that's not going to end up
their lawyers
litigation?
Were having nervous breakdowns. They actually attrition rate.
The interesting thing about this game is that you get to play table tennis, but you also get to sleep with prostitutes, shoot people, run them over with cars. You know,
I can't wait for the hot coffee mod.
Yeah. It's, you know.
All right.
So this news story comes from blackboxvoting.org. And what they said is basically Black Box sued the Sequoia in Florida. They sued to get the voting logs from the last election.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that at least 40 of the touchscreen voting machines revealed that votes were time and date stamped as cast 2 weeks before the election, sometimes in the middle of the night.
Whoa.
Hear that? It's the sound of this getting swept under the rug.
Whoa!
The logs contained approximately 100,000 errors. During election day, 1,475 voting system calibrations were performed while the polls were open, providing documentation to substantiate reports from citizens that indicate that the wrong candidate was selected when they tried to vote.
Hmm.
Another disturbing find was that several dozen of the voting machines with votes for the November 2nd, 2004 election cast on dates were actually cast on dates like October 16th, 15th, 19th, 13th, 25th, 28th. In addition to the date discrepancies, most had incorrect polling times, with votes appearing throughout the wee hours of the night. These machines were LNA tested, logic and something tested. I'm not sure what that is.
Algorithm?
I think that's right. And the test activities appear in the logs with the correct date and time, which it sort of indicates, you know, that maybe there were some votes going on in the middle of the night. According to voting machine assignment logs, these machines were not assigned to early voting locations, so the odd date discrepancies cannot be explained by that. So,
you know what?
That's interesting.
I can't believe I hadn't heard about this.
Under the rug.
I'm
you know what? This
so
is not
curious.
You should be able to vote online over the internet. You should be able to. This is the easiest from an ATM. A bank should be doing this. Banks have been doing this crap for 20 years. They get it right down to the cent. trillions of dollars pass back and forth. They do it correctly. It's not that difficult. If a bank did this thing...
Actually, Aaron, the thing to keep in mind, though, is, for example, I know a guy who used to work in a bank and walked away with quite a bit of money, because all he did, and he said it was the easiest thing in the world.
But do you know why it's the easiest thing in the world? It's not because he got away with it. It's because the banks don't – they let them do it because if they report it, it becomes public.
No, he went to jail. I mean, he did go to jail for it. But I mean – but the point being that, people notice – when their money disappears from their account, all he did was take money from someone else's.
Yeah, so that's part of the thing.
Hang on. People notice when their money disappears because they have, they go check their statement.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to something like this type of voting, I mean, when you vote, your vote's out there. You don't know if someone stole your vote and changed it to something else.
We should get a voter verification in 2 weeks.
Exactly. I
can check my account. Why can't I check my account and make sure that I voted correctly?
And I think that we should be able to do – that's what I was about to say is what we should be able to do is we should be able to vote and then we should have a number, like a receipt, that allows us to go and check and make sure that our number that we voted is what we voted.
Yeah.
You should
be able to verify that your own vote is what you voted. Paper trail. And three, voting on a Tuesday in the middle of a work week – screw that. The voting day needs to be changed to a weekend so that everyone has equal chance of getting to the polls.
Exactly.
And even better yet, why one day? Why in the world do we have to keep the polls open one day?
Well, we have.
Let's do it open for a week.
We do that now. There's early voting locations.
You can do early voting.
There's early voting location, admittedly. But for most people, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just open the polls for a longer time period.
It's a good idea. We should open them for a week's a great idea.
Right. Yeah.
It costs a lot more money, but, I think it's worth
Geek
it.
Geek politics. All done. Right.
Last but not least. The Army will not allow a Wiccan symbol on a dead soldier's grave. The widow of a National Guard sergeant killed in Afghanistan last year is protesting the military's decision not to allow a pentagram, the symbol of his faith, on his grave in a military cemetery.
What?
Stewart was a follower of the Wiccan religion, which is not recognized by the Department of Veterans Affairs for use in cemeteries. Stewart's widow, Roberta, said she will wait until her family's religion and its five-pointed star enclosed in a circle, with one point facing skyward, is recognized for use on memorials before Stewart's plaque is installed. It's completely blank, she said. So she had no idea the pentacle could not be used on her husband's memorial plaque until she had to deal with the agency after the death of her husband. It's discrimination, she said. They are discriminating against our religion.
Thought that was completely illegal. Like, you have to...
She's going to win this case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she probably... If this goes... Well, I don't know.
I don't know if she's going to win it. It is sort of a touchy
these
thing.
These days...
I admit I probably wouldn't feel comfortable, like, having, a satanic symbol next to mine. Next to, my significant other's gravestone.
Good point.
But...
And there are enough people that think Wiccan is satanic, so that,
When they see that star, you damn well better believe that they think that that's satanic.
Yeah, they put satanic and a couple black candles on that grave. Done. Done.
Just, it is sort of a catch-22, because I feel like I have to support the Satanist getting in there,
but I don't
want it next door,
It's the same thing.
What is
America?
What would it be, NIMBY? Not in my backyard. What would it be if it's your grave? because that's NIMBY, remember?
Yeah.
I don't know. Not in my gravesite?
Not next to my gravestone.
Yeah. It's like NIMBY.
Anyway. Perhaps we should move on.
All right.
So that would be NIMGUS?
NIMGUS.
NIMGUS, not in my gravesite?
All right. Well, let's... we're going to save, come back, and start our topic of the week.
Yeah.
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
I love Miller Joe.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to start our topic this week.
Dun-dun-dun.
This was inspired by Battlestar Galactica episode. Inspired by, but we've expanded it. We wanted to talk this week about civil rights in science fiction and fantasy. Whether does the desperate situations give government the right to compel citizens to behave in a certain way or even restrict citizens in desperate situations.
I think this is the nature of science fiction in many ways, is because science fiction is always about an extreme circumstance that allows you to then say, all right, well, this civics problem, which doesn't necessarily exist right now, population, abortion, birth...
Or it does exist, but in
a less fervent manner,
right,
then you can say, all right, well, what about this, where it's necessary and your mom's in jeopardy and whatever.
Well, you know, exactly. The sandbox stakes are higher, right, in science fiction. A couple of weeks ago, Battlestar Galactica had an episode where the president decided that she was going to ban abortion because the human race, or the whatever race they are dying out and they need babies.
Mm-hmm.
And they've decided that in order to save the human race, that they need to have babies and not kill babies. And so she reluctantly passed this law.
Wow.
So I was like, huh, interesting. You know, in this sandbox situation, we have this desperate, you know, this desperate situation where the laws are being tested.
I'm curious, in this specific example that we're putting forward, where does everyone stand? Was she right or wrong to ban abortion?
I'm going to make a broad statement, and I'll probably be eating my words after we discuss this, mm-hmm, but I believe that she was wrong and that we do need to stick to our civil rights and freedoms. And if that means through our own choices, we drift away and we kill ourselves off, then that's just the way things are. And that's the choice that we make. If as individuals, we don't want to increase the population by having babies or any of that stuff, mm-hmm, then that's our choice. I mean, why does the human race need to survive? I mean, why do we need to survive? Why do we need to exist forever?
Well,
especially if it means
like
that we're a slave. Well, I do personally, but why do you care if 1,000 years from now that humans exist?
Humanitarian altruism. Yeah, actually, I do.
So then, but do you believe that if they existed in the world of
what?
Logan's Run,
right,
where they were, you know, kind of imprisoned by the government,
right,
and
or
they
were H.G. Wells, and it's the Eloy and the Morlocks,
yeah,
whatever.
Which is that a form of existence that you would like? An oppressive government that, in order to keep them alive, or humans alive for that long?
Well, of course not, but it could turn out to be Krypton for all. Well,
I think each generation has to remake its own society, and as we have been, mm-hmm, always. So it's our responsibility. I believe that she was correct.
Mm-hmm.
Right. First off, my stance on abortion is wrong. I do believe abortion is wrong. However, I believe abortion is a right. There is no legal reason for it to be banned. There is a moral one for someone not to make the choice to do it.
Right.
Right.
I understand why someone would have an abortion,
mm-hmm,
and I could stand by someone while they feel they must make that choice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's my personal stance.
But personally, it's a non-issue for you. It's if somebody was pregnant in your life, you'd be like,
I would support their decision. But I would,
right,
you know, I would have to, you know, before they went in for an abortion, I would have probably asked them if they'd considered another option.
Well, what about
the
opposite?
Keep in mind my perspective. I'm adopted,
right,
from a woman who was looking for an abortion,
right,
when she came in.
Right.
She was in her third trimester when she came in to get the abortion.
Wow. What about the opposite? What in a world where there's overpopulation, do you believe they should make it illegal to have babies?
Like the China situation right
now. Yeah. Or that,
yeah,
when you hit a certain age, you have to walk into a disintegration chamber and get chewed up and get made into Soylent Green.
It's like, people.
Well, keep in mind, in Soylent Green, that was not the case. You were not mandated to go into this chamber. It was a choice.
He's putting forward a hypothetical situation.
Yeah, like Logan's Run, in a way, was the same type of thing. Like,
yeah.
When
yeah.
you hit a certain age, you retired because they wanted a healthy group of people, not all these old people dragging down the resources.
Right. Let me approach this from a real specific place. First, I want to start with the Battlestar thing and say, to me, that whole issue is sort of a phantom issue in Battlestar. The whole, you know, you can't, you know, have an abortion. You know, you should be able to have an abortion
because you're not propagating the species.
Well, because I believe that they're fudging the facts here. There's no way that they're having enough abortions out of the 40,000 people that they're having that it's going to make a significant difference in their chances of survival.
I think you're probably right on that point.
I would challenge that in one thing. One thing they haven't gotten into in Battlestar Galactica mm-hmm. yet is basically you cram that many people together into small tin cans, limited resources, small spaces. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet you that like rape is running out of control on those Starfleets. And well, that's going to be an impact
but
on
are there, Enterprise. But there's not – I don't think that there – even if there's a ton of rape, okay, I don't think that there's going to be enough children happening in this way that – I mean how many abortions do you think are happening out of 40,000 people?
And is it more than really? The amount of wanted births?
Valid. Okay. Right. But aside from that.
But yeah, so aside from that though – when it comes to my perspective on this is that we always make decisions like this, okay? Triage is a thing that people do. You make decisions, who's going to die, who's going to live. Mm-hmm. You make decisions that aren't your favorite decisions to make, but you make the best decisions that you can, and you make them for the survival of the species. That's why, for example, while we all in our torture episode talked about how we don't agree with torture – okay, we all talked about that we could see instances where it might be valid. Okay, but what we did say is it should never be condoned.
Right.
You know.
But what we're talking about today is whether the government has the right to set to.
Well, now when it comes to something like population control, absolutely the government has the right to say you can't have more
kids.
But I
mean, China did this. China literally.
What do you mean they absolutely have the right? I mean, you make it sound like that's so obvious to everybody.
Listen.
What about this?
Let me rephrase what Peter's saying slightly with my view, mm-hmm. which I don't think they necessarily have the right, but they have the responsibility to try. The government is responsible for long-term planning for that society.
Okay.
If they are not going to attempt to impose some sort of control, whether to encourage reproduction or discourage reproduction, who will? That is their responsibility.
Okay.
It's only if it's reached an end zone scenario that really...
I would agree with that. But my take on the Battlestar Galactica thing is you are in an Armageddon situation, right? Mm-hmm. The future of the human race is at stake, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I'm just on the opposite side of things from you. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's the responsibility of those who remain to give the potential future every chance it has.
Right. Okay, so let's bring up the Handmaid's Tale.
Okay.
Here's a situation that's kind of like Battlestar. Mm-hmm. The human race is dying off because people are not able to have children,
right.
except for a select few. And if you are found out that you are able to birth children, you are legally responsible to birth kids. You have to have children. That becomes your job for life. Do you think that is right, or do you think that's an oppressive society?
See, I think any time you have the ability of a government structure, and this is politic, which means it's the body politic, which means you're talking about a group, mm-hmm. a group mentality over the individual, then you end up spinning it into other separate scenarios. China, for instance, they had, I don't know when it was, the emperor wanted to conquer other lands, and he felt like China was underpopulated. Mm-hmm. So he said, everybody go out and multiply. Mm-hmm. And everybody did that for years and years and years until now China has an overpopulation problem, and they now have to have the exact opposite, and they have to have restrictions mm-hmm. because they only have limited resources. Mm-hmm. So anytime you're in a situation where you put restrictions on the individual, I think... by saying this is what we're doing for the future, mm-hmm. I think you're ending up with problems in the future no matter what, because you don't know what the problems that your restrictions are going to cause.
I think there are a matter of degrees to that, though. If in the Battlestar Galactica situation and the Handmaid's Tale situation, mm-hmm. the future's existence is in question, mm. whether or not there will be a human race,
right?
Whereas in the China situation, it's basically the
well, they're saying the existence of the Chinese people in this case, because they don't want to, go into civil war. They don't want to have limitation of resources.
Well, right now, with this situation, but I'm saying with the multiplication, it was a power grab.
Right.
It was an attempt to multiply. And, no offense to the Catholics listening, but it's the same thing the Catholic Church does. You will not ever engage in birth control mm-hmm. because we want more Catholics.
Right.
Let me submit this other situation. I was a couple years ago. I was attempting to rewrite the script "When Worlds Collide," which is the Earth is about ready to be destroyed for some reason. And the old one was another planet coming by. Mm-hmm. So the humans build a rocket ship, and they can put, like, 60 people on it and launch to a new planet that they can find. A new planet that they can find and repopulate. Mm-hmm. Now, in the original one, they didn't really hit on some of the philosophical and moral problems that this causes. But one of the ones I wanted to bring up was, would you put homosexuals on that ship if you knew that they wouldn't recreate? Or would you, if a government was going to launch a ship at that point, would you say, I'm sorry, but homosexuals are not allowed on that spaceship?
And I think that's what Battlestar is spinning into. You know, is not only they're saying, all right, you have necessary procreation in sort of to keep the race going. At what point does that become, you're 30, you're not married? What's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you get married? Settle down with a young girl, you know?
I'm afraid with this specific situation, the 60 people on a ship, the Battlestar Galactica situation, I do become a little bit more of a fascist than I like. 60 people left to procreate the human race.
Isn't that all the amount of pairs that you need to recreate? It's like 62 pairs, something like that.
Oh, I don't know.
I think that there's a specific number of pairs that you need. Otherwise, everybody gets...
I think you need 47 viable pairs, if I remember right.
Hmm. Otherwise, you end up with, deliverance.
But those people can't be monogamous. It's the responsibility of each of those pairs to provide as much genetic variation as possible to the next generation.
Why doesn't President Roslin say, you have 1 year to find somebody and to have one baby? That is the law.
Because we have an artificial situation here still.
Okay, right.
They're currently on a group of ships that barely has enough resources to support what they've
exactly. Got. That's why I don't understand why they're like...
Well, they're also having people die off, though. You got to keep in mind.
Look how fast the Viper pilots drop in this show. They need to have babies coming in.
All right, let's move on to some other resource management and stuff. I wanted to bring up this original Star Trek episode.
Well, I was going to throw out a quick reversal first.
Oh, okay.
Now, in the overcrowding situation, mm-hmm. right, should homosexuality be encouraged? With, Logan's Run. You got too many people. You got Soylent Green. You got too many people.
Is that why they had those two girls kiss in The Matrix?
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Right. That's exactly why.
All right, now you two kiss.
Should heterosexual relationships be only condoned by license?
Freaking heteros.
Breeders.
Well, birth control. I mean,
birth control's not 100%.
Yeah, but you could make it.
That's true.
You can
tie some tubes.
You can get snipped.
Snip.
I don't know. That
my dad got snipped.
Mandatory snippage for all men unless they have a license.
Snippage.
Now I don't know how you guys feel about this, but there was an organization here in Los Angeles who was paying women who were drug addicts to get sterilized.
Yes.
Messed up.
Now, they said, well, this is a big problem. You know, these women are having babies and they're giving them up or they're leaving them or they're crack babies.
Crack babies, yeah.
And this is we think it's a moral issue that they stop doing that. And we're not making them do it, but we're giving them money. And that was kind of crazy. I mean, it sounds messed up.
Ooh,
but where does that fall in this, this gray scale here? I mean, it's.
Wow.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
I knew this would be a hot topic.
I feel bad about it, but I'm with Peter on this one. I don't see a moral issue with it.
As long
as they're sober when they agree.
Yeah. I mean, look.
You're not. If you are a drug addict, when you're not on a drug, you're under the influence. I believe
you must give them the option for redemption.
They can still redeem themselves. What does a child have to do with redemption?
They can adopt. They can do all sorts of things.
Oh, my God.
But the fact of the matter is, if you...
Says two men. The ability to take away...
Says an adopted man.
Right.
I really don't see how having a biological child of your own is the only option for
As
redemption
a woman,
through a
the
child.
The ability to have a biological child of your own is one of the most important things.
Although you're all fine, with the Chinese government to restrict...
Well, and you're fine with the biological reproduction ability of a man being taken away?
Yeah. But that's me because I'm a man. I believe that a woman should have the right to choose it.
The right to choose, but they're choosing not to do this. They're choosing to take the money. They're choosing to have the operation. They're saying the drugs are more important to me than the ability to have children, which is a pretty good indicator that the drugs are more important to them than taking care of a child.
Yeah.
Boy, okay?
Absolutely.
I'm not taking a side on this because it's such a gray area, a slippery slope. I'm so conflicted on that issue, I don't even know how to say
it. I'm not happy about my feelings on it, but those are my feelings.
I'd like to bring up an old Star Trek episode. Do you guys remember? I should have looked up the name, and I know I'm going to get jumped on for not knowing the exact title.
You're our Star Trek geek.
I know.
You're supposed to know these things.
It's the one where a traveling Shakespearean group comes aboard the Enterprise, and one of the crew members recognizes the voice of King Lear, the actor playing King Lear, as one of the most hated men in the universe.
Oh, right.
This man, 20 years ago, was the leader of a planet that got hit with a food blight. They had 20,000 people on this planet. They had enough food to last 4 months for all 20,000 people. So they call for help. They call Earth. And Earth says, we can get there in 8 months. We'll send rescue ships. It's going to take 8 months. And he says, we're going to be dead by then. He said, there's nothing we can do. So he decides to save half the planet. And he orders 10,000 people to their death, so that the other 10,000 people can eat the food to last 8 months instead of the 4 months. Now, it just so happens that the rescue ship shows up in 4 months.
Oh.
And instead of being the man who saves 10,000 people, he's the man who killed 10,000 people.
Oh.
And he becomes the most hated man in the universe.
I've never seen that episode. That sucks.
Now, here's a moral decision that one man who represented the entire government at that point had to make. It was an absolute dire situation. Now, this is an extreme sandbox situation, but in order to save the human race, let's say that was the human race, mm-hmm. did he have the right, or do you think he had the obligation to make that choice? Or should he said, you know what? We'll see what happens. Whoever's left at the end is the people who will survive the human race.
4 months without food, that's not a possibility.
Yeah. But everybody would have been.
People may have died off beforehand. There were people could have been killing each other just to see. I mean, I'm sure that we'd all just slowly die off. There would be chaos. Should he have let that happen? See who, because there would be survivors. I guarantee there would be strong people who had killed off other people
and eaten them.
Maybe.
Well,
but what's the situation? What do you do? What does a government do at that point?
I would have put it to one martial law, so you get complete control, and then you say you start a vote, and you see how many people you can cull down by people taking a voluntary step into the disintegration chamber.
Do you think half the world's population?
No, but I think you could cull it down a great deal before you get to that
point. Were these terrible people that you lead? Are these terrible people that you lead?
No, but
then
if you know that...
why force them to make that choice?
Because you present them with the fact that... You know, this is 20,000 of us are all going to die.
It's a Terry Pratchett scenario right here. Okay. A mother is dying mm-hmm. in childbirth.
Right.
There's the choice to save the child or the mother, but not both. Do you go to the father and force him to make that choice? Force him to choose whether he kills his child or his wife? Or do you make the choice for him? I say, as the leader of those people, it is your responsibility to make that choice and not force that burden and that sin on those people that you lead.
Listen, I want to make my own choices. If they're tough choices, fine. I want to make my own choices, and I don't want someone else telling me what I got to do.
Right.
There is only one viable option, which is to kill half the people.
There's two viable
options. You can
options.
Offer up the option saying half the people must die. Will you offer yourself up as one of those people?
Well, let's pause for a second because that's not necessarily true. Okay. There are only two perceived viable options.
And in 8 months, you could figure some stuff out.
Now, look, let me put it this way.
In 4 months.
Let me put it this way. We're on a ship. The ship's exploding. Mm-hmm. You got 3 minutes to make a decision. Okay. Well, you make the freaking decision within the time that you have allotted. Okay. But the time they had allotted was a longer period of time.
No, wait, but the sandbox situation is you have two choices. I mean, you could say, yeah, sure, that you use technobabble. They, you know, fry some extra grain.
Stop. That's not what I'm saying.
Let me point out one other option, one other point here. Mm-hmm. Every week you go by without having that population is 1 week less.
But I do think that there is a lot to be said for bringing it to the people and saying, look, we're going to have to make some choices.
That's
here.
Democratic government,
you know. And
but
and
what do you
and,
think the votes are going to be?
And we will, you know, and you know, let me make this. You know, you then make when you have to make the hard decisions, you make the hard decisions eventually.
I think that the old would definitely decide to go before their youthful counterparts. I think people would decide they would.
You have a very, very
you have
rosy
a very
view of the human race.
Well, there are people who would do that.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you understood.
No, I disagree. I believe the old and the rich would expect the young and the poor to go first.
I agree.
I think that there are people who would do that. I didn't say everyone would do that. I said there are people.
So you're saying all the moral right people would be dying off and all the people, the dregs that are left, the selfish people would be left?
Yep.
I'm saying that you would that you would make your choices a little bit at a time. Instead of instead of just saying, you know what, there's four people in the room. You know what, Don, you're dead and you're dead, Matt.
So you believe
– I would say that you would talk to people and someone would go, you know what, you didn't know this, but I actually have cancer. So you know, rather than killing these, you know, one of these two, why don't you take me? Because –
You're not contradicting my proposal, which is to say half the people are going to have to die. We need to decide who.
Yeah, not random.
But what I'm saying is that someone, not a democratic process, will not work on this one. You can't take a vote saying, do we all die together or do we
I'm not saying it would cut down half the population, but people would make decisions, and you stood by that. If you can stand by your populace and present them with an option, then whatever the vote of the people is.
So you believe the government? It's the government's role to make decisions by themselves until something really important comes, and then we throw the
government. I believe that no matter what the government position is, that you are there to serve your populace. You are not there to make decisions for them. It's the difference between a dictatorship.
You serve your populace by making decisions for them. That's the way every centralized leadership position has always run, including the representation.
Except for democracy, which is basically
we don't live in a democracy. There are very few true democracies on this earth.
Right, and
because
I believe in true democracy.
You can't go above over 20 people and actually get anything done.
So do you think this nation would be in a better place if everybody could vote on every issue? Do you think that black people would probably like the world they lived in now if back in the day everyone got to vote on whether they wanted black people to have more rights or women to have more rights?
Yeah.
Oh, my
I'd
God.
Say, I
are
think
you kidding
have,
me?
You're out of your mind.
You're out
totally
of your
insane.
Mind. You think the majority of the population wanted black people to have to work, get paid the same, or women to get paid the same? Hell no. You can't even get a woman in the presidency
right now.
Right
every
now.
Single time they want to try and rally people to the Republican flag, all they need to do is bash on gay folks. Let's take another right away from gay
people.
Look at
one of the major reasons why you hate George Bush is because he unilaterally makes decision based on the fact that he thinks he's right.
But he got put there because of that.
That's exactly true. It's the democracy that you're touting that put that man there. And now he must serve.
No.
And now he must serve the democracy that elected him.
Actually, according to that news story.
News story.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Twice.
So, okay. What's another science fiction scenario
but
here?
But let's just say, you know, if you have to make a decision,
and half the populace
have to live and die, you make that decision. You choose to save the largest number of people you can save.
Exactly.
And you know, the guy was given facts, and he worked on the facts he was given. Okay. And, you know, boy, they got there in 4 months. You know, he was told that there was no way they'd ever get there in 4 months. Mm-hmm. They got there in 4 months somehow. You know, he
was
wrong.
So you think
wrong.
He made the right decision? You think the government has that responsibility?
I think he made the best decision he could make.
That's what's great about this episode is because it's just
– I mean, if we could have frozen half the people, great.
I don't think he made –
we don't have that option. We don't have that option.
He clearly didn't make the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because
based on the circumstances that happened,
based
on hindsight,
given the information he had, he made the best decision he could.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, he wasn't a monster. He wasn't a guy who said, "You know what, I want to kill."
Yeah, he was because he ran. He wasn't in Lear because he stuck around for his medicine.
Okay, what about the Star Trek episode where they go onto a planet and Kirk finds out that they're playing this weird war game, and when a hit happens on the planet, a virtual hit in this war game, the people in that area have to walk into a disintegration chamber and kill themselves. And this is because after just two planets who have been battling for so long were using nuclear weapons and destroying the environment, destroying their planets, that they both agreed that the government would enforce a law that they would play a virtual war and they would force their inhabitants to walk into death chambers. I know this is a little bit of a stretch, but this is a way that this is kind of an environmental protection and a planetary protection situation where they believe the human race is not on the ultimate scale of things, that the planet and the environment
is more important,
and the art and their libraries.
Yeah, I think that that's bullshit.
Yeah,
you know, because
so you would have rather them nuke the entire planet and destroy.
Well, no, I think I would rather them have to deal with the consequences. If those consequences are that important to them,
mm-hmm.
then they should have found a way to make peace.
Well, what about the consequences of abortion and population control? If we can't get it together as a society and not have the government enforce that on us, don't you think we should deal with the consequences?
Well, no, no. I think you're twisting things here. Okay, you're actually taking. When you talk about abortion and population control, that is about consequences. That is about
right. But don't you think that I should be able to have children if I want to have 12 children in a society?
I don't think that you should be able to do that if there's not enough room for.
Okay, but you do believe that the government.
I also don't think you should be able to have 12 children if you're not going to be able to feed them and clothe them. You know.
Okay.
I mean, like if you're going to have as many kids as you want, but yet you're going to starve to death because of it.
But you do believe that we should be able to launch nuclear missiles and entirely annihilate the entire planet and everybody else on it. Our decision.
No.
There's some skew going on here.
Yeah. Did anyone see that? No, that's not what we're saying.
I think my biggest problem with this one is that I have a hard time taking this one seriously because it's the massive prioritization problem that's going on. What they're saying is that the buildings and the environment are more important than the human life that they're trying to protect.
Well, the planet that they are trying to live on.
Yeah, but the reality is if they can make an agreement mm-hmm. that they're going to do war in this effed up way, they can make an agreement they're just not going to do war. Okay, what they've basically done.
We have rules for war all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
We have people used to line up and shoot each other.
Yeah.
And if you've deviated from that, the captains would show up and you know take their gloves out and smack each other in the face, walk back and get back in line, shoot each other. If they could agree to fight a certain way,
does not
mean that they would eliminate war.
I understand, but okay, we're also talking about civilians that were being killed too, correct?
Well, this is also removing one of the major elements that ends wars. Which is taking out the freaking infrastructure.
Right.
If you can, you know, take out the area around the missile silos and just wipe out all the people there, but the missile silos are still intact, the war is going to go on forever.
Right. Yeah, one of the things about this episode was the fact that this war had been going on for how long?
1,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Point of the episode was if you need to experience the results so that society changes.
Yeah.
What I was just saying.
But that's the same thing for all these things we're talking about. We need to experience the results of overpopulation for me to make the decision not to have 12 children, not the government to tell me.
Exactly.
That's the same correlation that I'm telling you.
There are always going to be crazy people, and that, you know, I mean.
Exactly.
Well, and ultimately, what it comes to with all of these governments, ultimately, it's the people's responsibility to watch the government. And if they disagree with what the government is doing, to change it by any means necessary.
By the way, let me also point out that I don't think it's let me tell you an example of population control that I would not support. I would not support, oh, you had a second kid, let's kill it. Or, oh, you had a second kid, you must die.
What about you go to jail?
I would support, oh, you had a second kid, now you have mandatory, you know,
civil
snip.
Service.
You know.
Civil service, you know. You now must donate 20 hours a week towards the betterment of mankind.
Something. I mean, yeah, I you know, like
it's hard position to reinforce.
Yeah, I really believe that
if you say okay, you got civil service for 20 things. Oh, I had a second kid, which is what I wanted all along. Mm-hmm. You know, but I only have to do 20 hours of civil service. Great, I'll do the 20 hours of civil service.
No, a week for the rest of your life.
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah, but
that's great. Now there's greater contribution to the social good.
There is deterrent. You know, there's deterrent, and you know,
Right. But if you're really trying to make social change and you're saying, you know, the inability to have a child is based on what you're contributing, it's the social deterrent in that case, I don't think, is enough to really make a difference.
Well, then you figure out something that
depends on how much of a deterrent you need. I'm just throwing out an example here.
Right.
Well, we do have all sorts of real world situations. You know, this is the same arguments that people are having about the Patriot Act. We are in a desperate situation. So if that is the case, we need the government to step beyond what we would think our bounds are. It's the exact same argument. It's just not in the extreme mode like these science fiction.
But we've seen no evidence that the steps that they're saying they need to take are, one, effective, or are, two, necessary. That's the difference.
That's the issue.
Well, but
like,
but
with population growth, you can just look and
because
see.
Because
okay,
we don't know.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. Every single, I mean,
exactly.
As much as I hate what they're doing with the Patriot Act, and I am completely an ear-honking liberal about that, we don't know. And we won't know for 40 years what information they have.
Actually, we have people from the CIA stepping forward and saying, no, this is completely unnecessary. They're spying on people that this does not apply to.
I agree.
We have intelligence professionals saying this is unnecessary, it is being abused.
Right. And you have
that's why we know.
And you have intelligence professionals on the other side saying the opposite.
Yeah, actually don't. We have people, employee of the GOP, saying that.
That's not true.
Name one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't come up with the names.
Name the guys who are the CIA agents.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How many books do you need?
Who do you think is actually doing this stuff? A whole bunch of people who don't want to be doing it? There's one guy up there who's like telling everybody to spy on people?
The point is that actually what we're having a conversation about is a slightly different thing. The point is that there needs to be some oversight of what they're doing, you know, before they take away these liberties.
You don't have to explain it to me. I actually disagree with it.
Yeah, one of the big problems right now is that with the domestic spying is they're saying we should be able to spy on anyone we want without Congress overseeing us.
Right.
That's a very specific group of
people.
And let's keep in mind that there's never been one wiretap that has been requested that has ever been denied. Ever.
Right.
Okay. So why do they need to
– Seven. Seven have been denied by the courts.
Oh, by the CIA?
No, yeah. by the FICA courts.
The FICA courts,
okay.
Yeah.
So there have been seven, but I was actually...
Yeah, but seven out of like 50,000,
yeah,
that's 50, a lot.
Okay, so why do they suddenly feel like they don't need oversight unless the people they want to spy on are not justified?
Their claim is they need it so that they can do it in extreme emergencies because they need the information now.
Bullshit.
The problem is they can get it retroactively. They can go get the information now.
But for whatever reason, their point is... And they're almost saying it. They can't quite say it because they know they're going to get in trouble. Is, yes, we know this is stepping over the bounds, but we're in a desperate situation.
Right.
Right.
And we're going to pass a law that either temporarily, because it used to be temporary, say for the next 4 years, we are going to violate your civil rights. That's what that act was.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have to pass it.
We are going to violate the shit out of your civil
and
rights.
And because we are in a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we don't have a science fiction show to look back on and see the results and the ship. You know, we don't know if the ship comes in 4 months or 8 months. But let's say it did save us once.
Right.
Would you say that was the best decision we ever made? Or would you say it's still bullshit?
You know.
I'm totally against it. Because I believe we need us to live with our situation.
I think it's getting crazy. But, yeah, I mean, that's true.
But
what happens?
In a historical context, I can understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But in the here and now, all I can say is if it is valid, then it is up for the people to decide it's valid and not do anything
about
it.
Well, just remember, every one of these situations...
So you think in this case,
it's up for the people to decide.
Whereas, I have stated earlier that any mandate put forward by the government... It needs to be validated by the people by their resistance or lack of it.
Unless
that's
there's 10,000 people that you're going to kill and it's a dire situation.
I said that before. If all 20,000 people believe you're completely nuts, it's up for them to say absolutely not.
I don't believe that.
But if you have martial law, what control do the people have over you? If you have the guns...
If you have... well, that's... Okay, in a situation where you completely have the guns and they're completely under your domination, then all responsibility lies at your feet.
All right, we should close this down. We're going
to
argue about this. This is a great, science fiction.
We have guns.
This is the reason why science fiction is invented, in my opinion. These are all, they are tough decisions. I go back and forth on each one of these topics,
it seems like.
I argue one side, and then, 10 minutes later, I'm arguing the other side.
Yeah.
This is the reason why we watch Battlestar. This is the reason why we watch at least certain episodes of Star Trek. This is the reason why we love these sandbox situations, because it puts us these all these issues to the test and actually makes us think about it. Sure, you know, people always say, you know, you're reading science fiction, you know, this, child that. But this is where the thought process happens. This is where we can discuss these type of things. So thank God for science fiction, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Starts a sharper dialogue.
We didn't even get to all this, you know, fancy stuff like Dragon Slayer and all that stuff. But,
civics,
you know,
voting.
What can we do? All right. We are going to get to our bit returning from back from popular demand.
Techno babble.
Babble.
So we actually took a suggestion from
a submission.
Who submitted this, Don?
WNYRPG Jim.
Oh yes, Jim.
Off of our forums.
Excellent. The hero system player.
Oh, shall we want to do it?
Somebody read the.
I'll read it. Okay. Unless Don
go for it.
Okay. Here's the techno babble. While investigating a rumored cache of ancient but highly advanced alien technology on the ravaged neutral zone planet of Monda, your away team has unexpectedly been surrounded by Alakian mercenaries who have trapped them within the ruins of the Mondan Central Library. Contact with your ship in orbit has been nullified by the ruthless Alakians' jamming devices. Damned Alakians think of everything. And every indication is that the mercenaries intend to slaughter the away team and take the ancient technology for themselves. Using only the technology you brought with you, including a handful of underpowered personal weapons, the ancient technology you've stumbled across in the library, and your fabulous powers of technobabble, how do you defeat the Alakians and signal your ship for a thrilling skin-of-the-teeth getaway?
So those of you who have never heard this before, we will solve this using technobabble.
Technobabble.
Escape the situation.
As inspired by Star Trek.
Yes. Okay, I'll go. All right. I can barely get these out. I always like laugh through the middle of them. Well, we all knew we didn't have much time. And it seemed that all hope was lost. But remember, we were in a Mondan library. Is it Mondan?
Mondan,
yeah, yes. We were in a Mondan library. And as you all know, the Mondan libraries were so complete that every answer to every question in the universe could be found within. And though the Alakians were rumored to, quote, think of everything, they actually didn't. So there stood my away team. Dr. McCormick, which we called him Muscles for some reason, Sergeant Green, Lieutenant Johnson, and Ensign Dewey, standing in these ruins filled with books, with the answer somewhere in the ruins. But how could we find the right book in all this chaos? It's if we had some way of searching, some type of system to find the right book.
Oh, no.
From out of nowhere, Ensign Dewey had the right answer. It was brilliant. Within minutes and a few index cards, we had the right book in our hands. The Idiot's Guide to Escaping Alakian Mercenaries in a Mondan Library. The first thing we learned was that these libraries had pretty sophisticated equipment to keep the collection as complete as it was. The microfiche used was so thin, one atom thick, that it took magnetic gluon tubes just to keep them together. Very powerful. Also, in order to keep the answers to every question in the entire universe, it was installed with a time Doppler book return, which allowed you to check out books from any timeline. Don't get me started on how complex the late fees were on this device. Pulling the time is relative trick didn't work with these guys. We needed to use the time travel machine to get into the future to get help, or back into the past to warn us. Well, you know how small those book return slots are, so we used the magnetic gluon tubes from the microfiche to pry open the slot so we could slip through. It was then when Ensign Dewey admitted that he didn't just come up with this Dewey system himself, that he was actually visited by himself by time-traveling Dewey back to give him the answer of the Dewey system. So I guess he did actually think of himself. He just gave himself a hint or something like that. Anyway, long story short, we had to time travel back to complete that paradox loop and give the answer to Dewey, and then go even further back to tell ourselves about the danger of the planet, which actually I don't remember receiving that information, causing another... Okay, we fucked up. We created a quantum paradox wave that collapsed behind us, destroying the entire universe and time. But one thing I did grab from the future, a copy of the next Harry Potter book. And let's just say, whoever you thought was dead may not be. I'll just leave it at that.
Very
and that's
nice.
My
excellent.
Very nice.
All right. Damned Alakians. Their war cries have been filling the air for days, and we were hungry, tired, and low on baronium rechargers. So we knew our blasters were not going to be good enough to hold them off for much longer. That stupid noise that they make, alack, 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 it makes them sound like Winona Ryder in The Age of Innocence, and that just makes me mad. But I had to put stupid 20th century movies aside because we had bigger fish to fry. It was Jennings who came up with the initial plan. I gotta get the guy promoted. He had heard that the Mondadians had used Vero Interfronzic technology to defend themselves in their 200-year war against the Alakian Empire. And although the Alakians had eventually bombed them into particles no bigger than a gluon, it held them off for a while. I split the party into two parts. Sergeant Yadira was to hold down the fortifications with five men, while myself, Jennings, and science officer Denrath Sip searched through the library for the information that we needed. But how to look through 100 rooms, each with 10,000 yoctaflops worth of information, for one teensy bit that might hold the answers we needed. It was like looking for a rice kernel on a sandy beach in a haystack. Then, Sip came up with a clincher. The Mondadians utilized an antiquated, but still way beyond any technology we have, form of nanotechnology to communicate. We had been interacting with their robots for days, but only through the screen of our modular comm cubes. Now, as you know, the comm cubes use a brainwave pattern set for humans, allowing us to communicate in any language, but routing the verbal information we hear through the cube, which then transmits the small warp burst transmission to our ship's computer. Then the ship relays a translated warp burst back to our ears, which is slow but useful and serviceable. If we could modify the existing cube with a Mondade nano communicator, we could route the information to our computer on the ship in a series of bursts in a two-pronged plan. One. We would time the bursts so that they would be in a military distress signal, and maybe some of the dumbasses, sorry, crew members, back on the ship would notice and send help. And two, if that didn't work, the ship's computer would be processing the information we were looking for and maybe find us a solution. We set to work. The airburst from the Riptonic grenades was getting closer. So, I knew Yadira was getting overwhelmed, and we were only a quarter done with the modifications on the cube. She'd come staggering down the corridor carrying Ensign Mort, trailed by must be like 80 Alakians. I left the modification to Sip, join the firefight. Well, let me tell you, got hairy for a while. Blasts going off, the whole team going down with carbo burns or worse. I hear a cry of, Captain, turn around and see Sip shove something in his ear before I was hit full in the chest with a blast from a Mondade pistol. I woke up on the ship. Turns out Sip and Jennings' idea worked. They were able to communicate with the library to get the Vero Interfronzic shields up and running, and then isolated our group in a circular shield wall till the bozos on the ship finally caught on and sent some reinforcements. They got to me just in time to replicate me a whole new chest. Of course, Sip still has that thing sticking out of his ear, and every once in a while he makes a weird noise somewhere between a hiccup and a computer error, but he's got a whole new repository of trivia for parties, so who knows?
At least he doesn't have a suppository of trivia.
Oh, dear. That's a hard one to follow. Very nice. Well, let's see. Well, as everyone knows, the fabled Mondan ruins of Greater Monda are constructed partially of a highly conductive material made of D-waved linear alpha particles. Basically solid light, right? These solid light supports run through each wall of the outer defensive rings and most of the walls of the inner cities. It's one of the reasons why the damn place is still standing. Anyway, the Alakians were closing in, and Willie Bloody Stupid Johnson, still on loan from Aaron's crew, couldn't figure out how to break through the Alakian jamming devices to reach my light cruiser, in geosynchronous orbit above us. Okay, Johnson's a smart guy, but his addiction to Centauri Viagra was definitely making him a slow thinker, so no matter how popular he was with the ladies or Ensign Landman in engineering, he just really wasn't cutting the mustard, all right? Anyway, the prolific tent that Johnson was sporting gave me an idea. First, we hooked up our remaining hand weapons to the central linear regulators in the Mondan Library, and then we set the weapons to diplasmatic waveform overload. Yes, now you see where I'm going with this. Once the weapons detonated, they sent out their waveform diplasmatic radiation directly into the central regulator and then out through the D-wave linear alpha particles that are built into every wall in the ruins. And when the waveform And when the waveform diplasmatic and D-wave linear particles combine, right, massive exponential expansion.
Expansion.
Okay. Suddenly, every light support in the place increased in size to something like the 144th power. Now, yes, admittedly, this would normally have killed us quite gruesomely, but as I mentioned, the ruin's outer defenses are built in concentric rings. And as the energy is now diplasmatic, it is repelled by its own wavelength. So, rather than collapsing immediately, the solid light walls had nowhere to go but grow straight up like Johnson. To my light cruiser, it looked like an enormous beam of diplasmatic multi-wave nucleic energy had just been fired at them from the ruins. They were no real danger, as I knew the trans-dimensional transducers could handle it if I actually hit the ship. Still, it was the sort of thing that one ship would notice, right? They scanned the surface of the planet, looked for the source of the attack, saw the Alakians closing in on our position, and wiped out the whole contingent from space, clean as a whistle.
Huh. Genius.
That's actually was pretty easy then.
Genius.
So, I was a little pissed that Johnson didn't find the freaking library when we were there. That book would have come in handy, but...
Funny. Well, that's it.
I've got links.
You have links?
I have links.
Fun links.
I don't. Okay.
First off, I'm not sure if this is something we've done before, but I found a 35-minute promo of the video game Spore.
Oh,
where
yeah.
You can watch them playing it from... the single stage up to space exploration.
Is it the one he's demonstrating?
It's
a great piece.
Yeah, so I have that one. I have a short film called WoW in Real Life, explaining the etiquettes of WoW and demonstrated how those etiquettes can be applied to real life.
That's cool.
Put together by a bunch of like Asian film students. It's really funny. I also have a brief interview with what's the guy's name? The director of Blood Rain. Talking about
Uwe Boll.
And last but not least, I have an amazingly fun, addictive game involving basically blowing up blobs.
Yes.
It's really fun.
Geometry Wars?
No.
Oh, okay. I got two. Very quickly, I got an MIT student. He's won a bunch of awards. He's a frickin' genius. This guy's going to be the next Howard Hughes. He's come up with a flying car, a desktop fusion reactor, and a cheap rocket engine.
Wow.
He's really, really, really cool. Check out his stuff. Check out the links. And the other one, which made me so happy, there is a massively multiplayer online Pong game. You can play Pong. Yes, massively multiplayer. And it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
So, does that mean you have like 9 people playing on the same table?
14 to 16 usually on either team.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like herding cats to get them.
Because they're all controlling the same paddle,
we're all controlling the same paddle. So you're all like, come on, up. No. It's hilarious.
Oh, God.
So you can find all these links and links to our news sites at our website, www.geeksone.com, where you can also find a link to our forums, which are going crazy right now.
Yep.
And
they will go even crazier after this episode.
Exactly.
You can see pictures of Matt in bondage on our forums right now.
What is with that?
it's your picture. And you can also get older episodes. You can find a pretty good extensive list of our older episodes and all their links.
Updated the archives.
That's right.
Brilliant.
And so anyway, go visit that. We have a great Frapper page, which people haven't joined in a little while, but it's a map of the world and where you live, and you can see where everybody who is listening to this lives on the planet.
Excellent.
Go post. Show
and
us where you are.
Don't forget to spread the geeky goodness with your friends.
Exactly. And thanks for everybody who went to iTunes. There's, I just went there, and there's all sorts of great reviews on iTunes, and you guys are very, very kind about
awesome.
What you said about us, and it was very fun to read. And we have like 12 reviews there now. So anyway, we'll do mail since we are so over time now. We're going to do mail. We should do like an all-mail episode.
We'll do an all-mail episode.
This is an all-mail episode.
Right. The other male.
Okay.
All right. So,
episode last week.
I spelled badly. I think he's talking about
it. I hope you guys have a good week. Have a good geek week.
Rock it out.
Rock it out.
Keep
bye.
It out.
Be good.